Time now for Fort McMurray Matters on Mix 103.7. All the topics and issues that matter to you and your family. Brought to you by Culligan Water, Fort McMurray Orthodontics, and by Cooper & Company Law Firm.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of Fort McMurray Matters. I'm Jared Vecchio. And joining me in studios today is Jay Telegdi, who's on behalf of the Athabasca River Métis, as well as Brian Fayant, who is the Disaster Recovery Coordinator with the McMurray Métis. So I thank you both for coming in today. And almost a year to the date when the 12 Indigenous communities came together to start a research project looking into how the wildfire impacted these communities, Indigenous people. So Brian, can you just give our listeners just a little bit more background on the project?
So three organizations got together. Was ATC, we call Athabasca Tribal Council, and the McMurray Métis / the Athabasca River Métis and Nestawayo. So it's four, but the Métis Nestawayo Friendship Center. So the idea was to try to get an understanding, capture what happened as a result of the fire. The wildfires, and so we ended up hiring a research company to do that and go and ask how did the wildfires impact you and affect you to this day. And so that's what they're doing right now. They're meeting with people, having group sessions, and each one of the communities gathering that data, and it's not finished. They've been doing that for a bit, getting a good sense of what's happened to them, you know. So now I think they're doing surveys. Not I think they're going to be doing surveys, and we're doing that to the communities as well.
Now, when you say how they impacted these communities, can you describe impact? How, like physical wise, like destroyed properties? How, what kind of were you looking for through this project?
So each community was affected differently. Right directly here in McMurray, we had a large population of members with the Métis local, plus there's this large number of Métis people here. But the areas that were impacted the most is waterways, Abbasan and Beacon Hill, were burnt out. And so a large number of our population owned homes, rented homes in those three areas. In fact, a larger portion of our members lived in there. And so they're the ones who are directly impacted. The Anzac, where there's Métis people, actually people lost their homes in Anzac, so because the fire went around and burnt that particular community out. And then the other communities just absorbed the impact or the effects of the wildfire. So they were impacted in several ways. They were directly impacted because people were left here and went to their Mackay. Mackay, Métis, and the First Nations ended up housing something like 10, not housing, catering to 10,000 people. Same with 468, same with Anzac, same with Conklin, and some people stopped in Janvier, but a large number in Conklin. So what you had was the communities being affected that way. Some, like I said, directly because they lost homes, they lost property. Mm-hmm. They didn't lose any animals as far as I know so far. Okay. Everyone I've been talking to, so that's a big relief. But all their mementos and all the stuff they'd collected over the years. So I think the only death that actually happened was an Indigenous girl, that it was an accident during that fire escape. Wasn't directly because of the fire, or maybe it was because of the fire. People are in a hurry. We don't know enough about that. Mm-hmm. But it certainly wasn't the fire that caused that. No one was lost during the fire in our community as well, but they lost a lot of homes in those areas.
Now, let's talk a little bit about some of the findings so far.
Yeah, Peter Fortnagh and Tim are the ones doing the research, doing the actual sitting down with the groups and stuff, trying to gather this data information and trying to make sense of it all. And they're the ones who are telling us that the numbers in waterways, Abbasan and Beacon Hill, had a high representation of Indigenous peoples, Métis, and First Nations, actually. So those numbers are higher in that area in all likelihood to have been affected the most as far as a community goes, you know? Mm-hmm. So something like 40% of our community was affected or impacted, if not more. And so that leaves a large hole or impact effect to our community. So those were pretty significant. again, the smaller communities, how they were impacted and affected by just using their resources or limited resources they had, dishing that out, sharing that with people that were coming there, like 468. I mean, they allowed Indian Beach to open their gas. They restricted to make for everybody, but they still opened those doors to everybody. Same with Conklin. They just maxed themselves out to the point where they didn't even have resources. The problem with that is that when everyone left town, left the community, McMurray was shut down, these communities don't have a place to come and shop for their supplies and materials. Now they're abandoned basically and having to go further south to recover their resources and supplies that they need for them. Medical supplies, food supplies, mm-hmm. all kinds of supplies they need, right?
Kind of like a history question, but is there a reason why Abasan, Waterways, and Beacon Hill were like the three big areas for why indigenous people were living there?
Yes, of course. Historically, Waterways was where the initial, if you ever checked out there's the docks that used to be there on the water, mm-hmm. waterway system, and that was where the railroad ended. So what happened is the business, the Métis people did business around that particular place, bought property, owned property, rented in there, and so there that's why there was a large part. As well as when Suncor initiated their projects, they built up in Abasan, so a lot of our people were in those areas initially and ended up owning property and renting from those apartments there, and the same thing with Beacon Hill. So those are old mm-hmm. our initial first home communities there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now you mentioned these three areas and indigenous people were living there, a big population there, but the wildfire doesn't play a part in that. So is this research project going farther past just the wildfire and how impacted indigenous people living in the RMWB?
Yeah, so thanks for that question. So there's already been two studies so far. There's been a study on the response to the wildfire by the RMWB and then another one by the province, and both of them, they really just glanced over the impacts of indigenous people from the wildfire. They did not go into any great detail. So we're hoping in this one that we really see the depth of the impact. Mm-hmm. And the thing that listeners need to know, or anyone who's reading the report needs to know, is that we hope that it's going to factor in not just the events of May 3rd, but all the stuff that happened before May 3rd to make the impacts felt so much more harsher, deeply. And so the stuff I'm talking about is decades of neglect and poor public policy on behalf of all levels of government. So if you think about it, you know, you're dealing with the community or communities in many cases that have substance abuse issues, lack of employment, poverty issues, poor health because there's such a high prevalence of diabetes because there's no good food to eat. There's not a lot of stores in these communities. And then you factor in stuff like residential schools or the impact from colonialism or the fact that Métis rights aren't recognized in Alberta to a large degree, or even closer to the home, the fact that the new town of Fort McMurray in 1978 bulldozed an indigenous community at Moccasin Flats. So you take all that together, even before the fire, you can see it paints a pretty bleak picture. So then, you know, light the town on fire and see what the response is, right? So this is what we're hoping that will be revealed in this, that, you know, going into it, not everybody in the RMWB entered the fire at the same sort of
preparedness.
Yes, thank you. And what we'll see, this research will bear out, is the fact that a lot of these indigenous communities were disasters waiting to happen, and it wasn't a natural disaster or a freak that set it off. It was man-made, decades of public policy.
All right, well, Jay, Brian, don't go anywhere. We're going to take our first break here on Forming Murray Matters, but when we come back, we're going to continue our talk about this research project.
You're listening to Fort McMurray Matters on Mix 103.7, brought to you by Fort McMurray Orthodontics, Cooper & Company Law Firm, and by Culligan Water. We'll be right back after this.
See
you. Now, back to Fort McMurray Matters on Mix 103.7, brought to you by Culligan Water, Fort McMurray Orthodontics, and by Cooper & Company Law Firm.
Welcome back to Forming Murray Matters. Good afternoon. I'm Jaron Vecchio. And if you're just tuning in the show right now, before the break, we are talking to Jay Telegdi and Brian Fayant about a research project that started almost 1 year to the day last year, looking at the impact that the wildfire had on the Indigenous people, Indigenous communities. And Jay had mentioned just before the break that the impact goes farther past the wildfire, before the wildfire, as they say the communities weren't fully prepared for a disaster like this. And I know, Brian, you kind of want to touch on that.
So on the preparedness part, I just want to address that. And when I think of that, I'm thinking more of communication. So what happened with the municipality, they have a group of people that would come together and have a discussion and inform the public or their particular contacts that there's an emergency happening. And at some point, they actually call a state of an emergency. So what happened with the Métis and the First Nations is there was no point of contact in those communities. Someone to be told, by the way, we're calling a state of emergency, there's a fire, you need to get out, tell your people to get out. So that system wasn't in place. It's still not in place, although it's Mackay First Nations have worked on their disaster plan. I don't know who else, but the rest of the other communities haven't done that. So they're really anxious about having something built in there. Mm-hmm. So in other words, what happened when they first called POC, the provincial office they got together and they had their network with the municipality. Then the regional ROC took over the control of the fires. At that no point did they really have the Indigenous community network or communication system in place. So that was a part that was really missing and needs to be built up and ready for next go around. That's just one piece, not considering all the other resources in a disaster situation, right? Mm-hmm. So that would be talking about what kind of materials, equipment, people readiness, trained people in the community to be able to battle off any disaster, not only fires, the floods, could be any other types of disasters. We need to be ready and we need to be available. And those communities stand alone. So it's not like they can expect someone to come and run to their rescue. Mm-hmm. They need to do it for themselves and have the resources to do that.
Now, we were also talking a little bit off air, and Jay, you mentioned the difference between people living in Fort McMurray compared to these other communities. It could be as simple as a phone. You're mentioning that a lot of rural residents are having a lot of problems with insurance companies, as well as a lot of them don't have email address, a lot of them don't have bank accounts, so it's been a tough struggle to try to get some insurance money. Can you just kind of expand on that?
Yeah, sure. So a lot of the problems that the people, Indigenous people or people in the rural hamlets face are similar to that that the residents of Fort McMurray experienced. But the difference is they're less prepared to handle it, okay? So here's a great example, and I'll use myself as an example, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm a white male who is educated in Canada and has an understanding of the systems and how to sort of navigate bureaucracy and look out for myself. A lot of people in some of these Indigenous communities can't say the same, don't have the same experience. So I saw the difference in between my ability to recover and the impediments to my recovery and how much more the impediments were faced by Indigenous people. And so a great example is, okay, so I've got problems with insurance. A lot of people have problems with insurance. I have an unlimited phone plan where I was able to, if needed, sit on hold with my insurance company for hours if I needed to solve the problem. But Indigenous people, a lot of them don't have unlimited mm-hmm. Phone plans, right? Some of them have pay-as-you-go or what have you, so they don't have the same ability to sit on hold and figure out their insurance stuff. And instead, they have to go into maybe some sort of office somewhere. They've got to travel. They've got to meet with people they don't know, right? So it's a little bit of an impediment. Another one, so when Red Cross is emailing money, well, it's fine for me. I just check my email. I deposit the money. Well, what do you do if you don't have a bank account? Or what do you do if you don't have email? Same with the Notley Bucks, right? When the province started giving out debit cards, it was great for me. I was able to use it that same day. Well, a lot of the Indigenous people, they didn't have bank accounts, and so that they weren't able to deposit the money the same way. And in fact, one of the big problems we faced was trying to figure out how to get the Red Cross money, or the Notley bucks that they called it, to the different people. And so we had to try and track down family members who would have a bank account and try and get them to cash the money and then give it to their grandparent or whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. So those are just a few examples, right?
Now, you mentioned phones, email addresses, and bank accounts. Just personally, I don't know their experience. I have not. I've been to Anzac, but I haven't been to many of the rural communities. Well, what is the main reason for them stopping them from getting a bank account, getting an email address? Is it just lack of availability? Is that the main issue?
So a couple things, right? So you go to Mackay, and there's one bank machine. Right, and it's in the, I think it's in the corner store that's only open, you know, however many hours a day, and there's just no services, right? There's no bank in Mackay, there's no bank in mm-hmm. Conklin,
yeah,
right, and also, so there's that, number one. But secondly, it's a, you know, maybe a little bit different way of life, a different, you know, traditional existence where they didn't rely on banks and cell phones and emails in the same way.
You're listening to Fort McMurray Matters on Mix 103.7. Brought to you by Fort McMurray Orthodontics, Cooper & Company Law Firm, and by Culligan Water. We'll be right back after this.
Calm.
Now, back to Fort McMurray Matters on Mix 103.7. Brought to you by Culligan Water, Fort McMurray Orthodontics, and by Cooper & Company Law Firm.
Welcome back to Fort McMurray Matters. I'm Jaron Vecchio, and if you're just tuning into the show right now, joining me in studios are Jay Telegdi and Brian Fayon, talking about a research project looking into how the wildfire impacted Indigenous communities as well as Indigenous people. And before the break, Jay had mentioned that these communities weren't fully prepared for a disaster like this. They don't have a lot of the amenities that Fort McMurray has. They're having trouble with insurance, as they're having trouble getting on the internet, getting a bank account. And just touching on preparedness again, and a lot of these communities, Conklin, Janvier, Fort Mackay, I'm sure I'm missing a few more, helped house a lot of people when they were coming, evacuating Fort McMurray. So my question is, were they prepared to help house this influx of people?
In short, the answer is no. So let me just say this. So after our first responders did such an amazing job, our fire service, police service, bylaw service, paramedics did such a great job. After that, it was the rural and Indigenous communities that were really there as the first line of defense to help and support the residents of Fort McMurray as they fled for their lives. So, you know, before the Red Cross, before insurance kicked in, before the Notley Bucks, before Trudeau said he would match Canadians' donations, there was Anzac, mm-hmm. there was Conklin, there was Mackay, there was Fort Chippewa, Janvier, and Chard, right? These were the communities that were the first to open their doors to help the residents of Fort McMurray. And everyone played a role. You know, little kids gave up their beds, elders offered support and guidance, adults cleaned out their cupboards. And what we saw really was, in some cases, the people with the least gave everything that they had to help their neighbors. So it was great that everyone came together and showed that sort of support and solidarity, but there was no plan, and that was exposed, and there's still no plan, right? And if the plan now is just to rely on the Indigenous communities to do it all again, well, that's a recipe for disaster.
Mm-hmm. It's unfair. No, you know, that needs to be planned. That needs to be worked into the plan. So I think that's a huge... It's not a huge concern. It's like, because it's what do you call it? It's there. It's in your face, and that's just not acceptable, you know? Mm-hmm. So they need to build them in. That just needs to be part of the plan.
All right. So let's talk about what the research project, what you're hoping to see come from the research project. We've mentioned lack of bank accounts, email addresses. Is that a big focus? Maybe getting more bank or bank machines to these communities, given better internet access so they can have email addresses, making sure these communities have a better emergency plan. What other kind of results are you hoping to come from this project?
Well, first off, the research, I want to mention this, is Dr. Tim Clark is a doctor. So this research is research. So it's not, Peter is the manager of this mm-hmm. project. So this will be credible research. It's data-based. So statistic-based, so it's going to be all numbered out. And so that's going to be important. It's not going to be skewed. It's going to be we're going to try and make it as factual as possible. So all the right questions, you know, did you have insurance? Did you not have insurance?
Yeah.
All that kind of stuff. How did you fare? Where were you? Where did you go? What did you have? Those kind of stuff will come out of this. And I think, like you're saying, is what in the end is what do we want to see? Well, if I listened to the elder when she said, I would have minded if someone had talked to me and let me know there was a fire, that would be good information. I've got insurance. It would be nice to have someone help me interpret how to talk to insurance companies. Some of the insurance companies were absolutely great. They didn't even question. They took a look at your policy. Okay, let's get helping. But there's been some insurance companies that have been just difficult and harsh and cruel to some of the people. A few people did not have insurance, so they are struggling to rebuild, and that's been a challenge. And I've had to deal with a few of those members as well. So the long haul, there's a whole bunch of pieces that need to be done. The communities need to have a system in place when you buy the municipality and a province, when there's a disaster, who do you contact? Well, we'll contact a person at these administrations. That person's assigned. The municipality literally has their own person within their administration that knows how to connect and relate to the indigenous community. And while the municipality has an indigenous community, it's not in the disaster component of it, because disaster is quite specialized. They kind of take charge. They're the bosses at that time. And if they don't have the system in place, it's not going to work, because it's not built into their system. It needs to be pre-built. And so that it becomes effective, they follow that script, you know. So that needs to be done, designed before there's a disaster and going forward. You know, so yeah, and the communities, they need to be prepared. They need to be ready. What does that look like? And now, what do we do to build the resources for going forward from here?
So tell me if I'm wrong here, but would you say the goal, help these communities with better preparedness by fixing problems that were there before the wildfire?
Well, let's fix it now. Let's plan, yeah, and let's work them in. Let's work all the communities in. There, we're glad to be there. They didn't even question. There was no doubt that they would help people. They got out their food. They were putting kitchens. Mackay First Nations had a big kitchen over there, they were feeding people, and they had no problem doing that. They didn't have to be called to do it. They did it because they knew that the need was there. Same with the Kaimiti. They opened their doors because I took 20 members, 5 families or 20 people. They slept on the floors there, you know, and they fed them. No one called to say, can you do this? I called. I asked them if they would do that. Oh, of course we'll do that. That's not because the municipality or the ROC or the POC were saying, we need your help. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not, and we're going to compensate you for that. Thank you for that. I don't know if they did thank them. They might have, but there's been no dollars, you know, sent over there saying, okay, thanks for all that. Mm-hmm. But you can be sure that they recovered their monies that they lost, you know.
The research project is still ongoing, as they are starting a survey this month going until January of next year, with Indigenous people in the region getting a chance to fill out the survey. They'll be asking questions about how they were impacted by the wildfire, how is their recovery going, insurance questions like that. And all you have to do to access a survey is go to facebook.com/RNWBIWA. Well, that's all the time we have for today on For McMurray Matters, but make sure to tune into Mix 103.7 every weekday at noon to hear the interviews that matter to you and your community. Once again, I'm Jaron Vecchio, and this has been For McMurray Matters.
This has been another edition of Fort McMurray Matters on Mix 103.7. Brought to you by Cooper & Company Law Firm, Culligan Water, and by Fort McMurray Orthodontics. If you have a question or a comment about today's topic, or have an idea for a future show, please contact the news department by emailing mixnews@mix1037fm.com.